That's dirty. That's absolutely dirty. You go clown the blonde hair face. You got to clown that. How dare you?
Damn.
That is messed up, dude.
That's probably my best clown on you ever, to be honest.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Like, dude.
You are Locked On Hornets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
In a minute, cuz. We live. We live.
Hornets Twitter was arguing about the color purple yesterday, and it was hardcore arguing about the color purple, whether we are getting rid of it as a Hornets franchise or whether it deserves to even still be here. And that's something that we can talk about here on the podcast today. Just the color purple, Nada, and we're going to talk about it.
Look, the only color purple that happens to be old, nostalgic, that's actually good is the Spielberg film with Whoopi Goldberg in it.
I don't want to say
that in a Lakers jersey.
Yep, there you go. I wanted to put that on the tee for you. You knocked it out of the park. We're part of the Locked On Podcast Network. It's your team every day. Local experts on the number one daily sports podcast network. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast, and follow us on Twitter at Locked On Hornets. I'm on Twitter at Walker Mail, and Nada is on Twitter at Nada the Scribe. So not only did we have the jersey discussion yesterday, we came on and recorded our podcast really, probably 10 minutes after they revealed it to the public, even probably before the 10 minutes they revealed it to the public. And so now here we are 24 hours later, after the unveiling, to all the Hornets fans and everybody else that are considered NBA fans. They also released what the court is going to look like at the Spectrum Center. And so we'll give you our reactions to that. But Nada, as we sit here 24 hours after the unveiling, we got a little bit more of a response from everybody. How do you feel still? Do you feel any differently after we had some time to digest the uniforms? Do you feel differently about the reception of what everybody saw? Are there any new thoughts that you have on the uniforms after 24 hours?
So I saw a tweet yesterday from a reaction. Eric Walden of the Salt Lake Tribune had commented on the jerseys, and I could not agree more when he said these jerseys were the NBA uniform version of Ambien. That's what they are.
Oh, wow. They put them to sleep? They put you to sleep too?
Yes. Again, like Sergeant Slaughter in 88, put me to sleep.
No way.
These are not
Ambien jerseys. That is going too far. Here's the reaction that I saw from most people, and I think it probably is a little bit different than what we talked about yesterday.
Yeah.
I think the reaction was probably somewhere in the 70% approval rating to the 30% saying they weren't big fans of it. What you just said was that basically that's a statement of just trashing the jerseys. I didn't see a whole lot of trashing the uniforms yesterday. Any kind of insult that was hurled towards the jersey way was going along the lines of what you initially said. It was just kind of feeling that they were okay. I didn't see anybody say that they hated them. I didn't see anybody say that they were extremely boring to the sense that Ambien might tell you that they were boring. I just really thought that if anybody didn't love them, they just were kind of underwhelmed by them and didn't really care too much about them. I think that's kind of the approval rating that we got. Maybe a 70% happy with it, 30% just okay with it, where very few people were bashing what they saw. And I think after I got a chance to kind of look at it after 24 hours, I still am very much a fan of them. If I had to rate them on a 10-point scale, I'd go with the 7.5 to 8. I was a real big fan of them. I love the white ones. I tweeted out yesterday. I thought those white ones were fresh as hell. I am a fan of the teal ones too. I think the shorts are growing on me, because I tweeted out, if I had to nitpick, I'd have the pinstripes go down to the shorts. But, you know, the OG Hornet uniforms, they didn't have the pinstripes go to the shorts either. You can go to like the Magic jerseys, the Bulls black with the red pinstripes. I think those pinstripes went all the way down to the shorts. I think the Pacers pinstripes, they also went down to the shorts. And so maybe it can be a little too busy. I think the shorts were growing on me. The purple aspect, Nada, that became a big point of discussion yesterday.
Yes, especially in my mentions. But again, I courted it.
You've been a P. Yes, you did.
Of course.
You courting Twitter debate? You don't do that.
Fair enough.
That's not something you find on Not of the Scribe. You are a hater of the purple. I think most people are a fan of the purple. Here's one thing I do want to say about purple. I'm not going to use the phrase the color purple anymore.
Here's one thing
I want to say about purple. I don't think the Hornets are completely neglecting that. I don't think the Hornets are absolutely kicking death to the curb, because the Charlotte Hornets, the CHA uniform that everybody hates with the letters, at least, they're still going to be predominantly purple, and that's going to be in the rotation still. And so even though it's not a part of the primary jerseys that they're mostly going to be wearing, it still doesn't mean that they're going to completely kick purple to the curb. So I just want to put that out there. It doesn't mean that you're getting rid of it altogether. It does mean that it is going back to what is an alternate jersey. And I will say this, it can allow us to serve a transition to the court. You don't find a whole lot of purple on the court either. I am a fan of incorporating more purple. We are the purple and teal here. I mean, it's just something that the Hornets have always been. But they're not completely eradicating the color from their scheme. And that's something that I wanted to put out.
Yeah, no, I get that. But Walker, here's where I'm at with all of this now. And this is why, even though the color schemes bother me, I might call them ambient, I realize this is not about me. And I think that's what a lot of folks are forgetting, is that a lot of this is not aimed at us. A lot of this is aimed at the young kids that will harass their parents to buy these jerseys. So you know what? I'm okay. It's about the next generation. It's not about me. It's not about what I want. So when the folks get mad about these aren't our colors or this isn't tradition, yo, you know what? Let's create a new tradition. Because again, being stuck to the old tradition, and I guess this is my problem, being stuck to tradition can create shackles more than create creativity. You know what I mean?
I think the jerseys are so important specifically to the Charlotte Hornets more than uniforms are important to other franchises.
Because that's all we have, really.
It's all we have. And it's just the harsh truth. And it's something we can embrace. It put us on a national spotlight where people loved the jerseys. And I don't mind reaching back into our past and bringing back the pinstripes. And here's another thing. It's not like other franchises aren't doing this too.
You know,
the Grizzlies are doing this, are living in nostalgia where everybody loves those old school things. You know, the Toronto Raptors, you know, it's not like we see these teams dramatically change color schemes. You know, we can even go to the Denver Nuggets, where they kind of brought back the rainbow to their jerseys and had that a part of some of the things that they were donning, even in still present times.
And now, to be fair on that, Walker, and I will defend the Mile High City jerseys, because those look fly.
They do.
They reimagined those, and instead they put a black background on those. Remember, they put a black background, and those things look just, they're flames.
I'm with you. I think they look sick too. I'm with you on that. And I think when we talk about if you don't like it getting incorporated, then just the way they did it, I should say. If you don't like the way they incorporated it, then cool. But other franchises go back into their history as well and incorporate it. And if the Nuggets did it better, then fine. I think I can swallow that a little bit easier. But I am here for the Hornets actually trying to do it. And it goes back to another thing, that they seemed to listen to the fans here. The fans, I think, overwhelmingly did want the pinstripes back a part of the jerseys, and that's something they did, and I will commend them for listening to the fans, because it's not like a franchise that doesn't have a history of winning can do really anything else other than listen to their fans.
And you're not wrong there.
On this aspect, I should say.
Yeah, on this aspect, you're not wrong, where they need to listen to the fans because the fans are going to buy the gear. My only issue with this, and this is something that I'll continue to repeat, is I wonder, with these Hornets things and with them trying to go back to nostalgia and trying to basically drink from that well, how much of it are you trying to appeal to the fan that's going to be nostalgic but is never going to buy a ticket until you win? Because you're not bringing those people in anyway. You're not appealing to them anyway. So you're better off probably trying to appeal to folks that haven't experienced a Hornets game, folks that, again, are looking for new tradition to be built here. So I guess that's my issue with this. How much of this is appealing to guys that aren't going to buy tickets anyway?
One thing I will agree with you. I do love the Buzz City jerseys. I think that is innovative. I agree with you on that. And I do think those are awesome. And I am excited for the unveiling of the new City Edition jerseys that they're going to have that is going to replace the cool gray jerseys. We'll see if they actually go with another CHA jersey. But I am excited for the Buzz City and the one that's replacing the cool gray, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. The thing that I worry about in all of this, Walker, is that we are going to get, again, I guess I'm worried that we're going to get something that's very, very underrated or underwhelming. And then I'm going to be very, very upset because the Buzz City jerseys, for me, are probably the most innovative thing that the Hornets franchise has done. And in the rebrand of the Charlotte Hornets, the Buzz City are the most creative. It's the most forward-thinking thing they've done. And that's one of those where they did not let tradition become a shackle or chains or hold them back. And instead, they made something really, really creative. And unfortunately, the fans all hated it because it wasn't enough tradition.
All right, I don't want to pack this again. I guess we are going to just have this be one segment before we get to our friends, Rock Auto. But real quickly.
The court, I love the court. I absolutely love the court.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I think
the court's better than the jerseys.
Well,
by far.
We'll disagree on the jerseys, but we can agree on the court. I'm a fan of it all. I thought the court unveiling was also really cool. I'm actually a fan of the honeycomb or the cells, as it is technically referred to, because the Hornets live in cells, not honeycomb. But the fact that it only goes to the 3-point line and it's not inside the paint, I think that is kind of a cool touch. I like the contrast between the classic nice wood finish inside the 3-point arc compared to the honeycomb / cells that are in between the 3-point lines on the court. I do think that looks really good. And it is funny to me in the media unveiling that they had 2 hours before they actually unveiled it to the public in the video that they had in Seth Bennett. I forget who asked this, but Seth Bennett, who was giving us a ton of information on everything, it was actually, he did a fantastic job. I had no clue. All of this stuff went into everything that they unveiled yesterday. But he mentioned how technically they try to be tied to a theme with Hornets where it is the cell, right? Because Hornets live in the cells. And so technically it's not honeycomb. But if the fans want to call it the honeycomb, then of course that's something they're fine to ride with. I just thought that was kind of funny. Like they're trying to stick to the theme of the Hornets. I guess that's more honeybees that stick to the honeycomb. But I don't care. The honeycomb is pretty dope to continue to refer it to. So
yeah, it's awesome.
That's what we're getting.
It's awesome.
Go ahead, Nana.
No, it's awesome. And it's one of those things like that at some point, like that's the tradition and that's the thing that I would love them for them to do is just to build on old traditions, but actually throw a creative slant into it instead of just throwing us more nostalgia and basically trying to appeal to people that aren't going to buy tickets anyway.
All right. So we have some other stuff that we do want to get to. We do have the mock draft. I only want to give you a taste of the mock draft and why we selected Killian Hayes, because we have another episode where I'm actually going to be appearing. It's either going to be me or Nada appearing with Golden State Warriors, Locked On Warriors podcast host Wes Goldberg, as well as Ben Beacon, who we did do a podcast with earlier when we were doing the Delete 8 mock drafts. We actually had a couple of top three picks there as well. So we are going to have a mock draft podcast with all of the hosts included. So maybe we don't do everything in the second segment regarding why we chose Killian Hayes third. But maybe we'll give you a little taste as to some of the guys that we could have considered. And then we'll dive a little bit deeper because I've been doing a lot of research the past days more so. And I'm forming some strong opinions and one that is going to be a little bit different than I think something you hear elsewhere. One thing that you should be hearing all over the place is how great rockauto.com is. Chain stores have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers, but rockauto.com's prices are the same for everybody, and they're reliably low. rockauto.com always offers the lowest prices possible rather than charging prices based on what the market will bear, kind of like what airlines do. rockauto.com is for everybody, and they don't require membership or an account login. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. And whether it's for your classic or your daily driver, they get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. Best of all, prices at rockauto.com are always reliably low, and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. So you have to ask yourself, Why should you spend up to twice as much for the same parts? Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or your truck. Write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know we sent you. They have an amazing selection. They have reliably low prices. They have all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com. Plenty more to get to here on the Locked On Hornets podcast. Devontae Graham snubbed and he had a reaction to it. We discuss that next on the Locked On Hornets podcast.
This is Locked On Hornets.
Final play, though, was pretty doo-doo. You missed the shot, but that was and that good. It was reminiscent of Hornets inbounds years past.
I was going to say, yeah, it was doo-doo, as you said, and it reminded us. What was the other shot that you didn't like, Doug?
It's a technical term, technical basketball term. I'm a smart basketball guy.
It's time for more of the Locked On Hornets podcast.
Nada, I'm trying to get away from the jersey and the court talk. I'm trying to, but you're not letting me. You just sent me a text, and of course, it references what the Jazz are doing now while they are going to unveil a new court. And what are the Jazz doing, Nada? They're reaching back in their past and bringing you the old school Jazz logo to the center of their court with maybe a little bit of a different trimming when it comes to the out of bounds line. So is it a little bit easier to swallow the fact that other NBA franchises are doing this just like the Utah Jazz are?
Walker, how many black people are in Salt Lake?
Oh, not only are there not many, there are also racial slurs hurled out there. So yeah, probably not a whole lot.
No, exactly. I am not using the Jazz as the arbiters of cool for anything.
You're right about
anything, Walker.
God, so, those logos were sweet though, right? Like
they are.
Say that the jerseys weren't cool though.
Here's the thing. The jerseys, like, it's nostalgia, Walker. I don't get drunk on nostalgia like the rest of you do.
I'm not even saying that. Let's just objectively measure how cool they were, because I do think the jerseys were cool. I'm not trying to say, yeah, I loved those as a kid. I think I look at those now and think those jerseys were sweet. The only problem, I think we're having a hard time getting over the fact that it was Karl Malone and it's in the Utah Jazz. I think it's in Utah, I should say. I think that's the problem that we're having trouble getting over, rather than actually just looking at the laundry. If you just give me the jersey with a random number, then hell yeah, that jersey looks sweet. But then you put it in Utah and then you give me Karl Malone donning the jersey. I think.
And John Stockton, who was the dirtiest great player ever. The dirtiest. That man is the Ric Flair without the titles of NBA basketball. Dirtiest player in the game.
I do love John Stockton though, right? Like, we can like John Stockton, can't we?
No, we can't.
We can't like John Stockton?
No.
We can serve John Stockton.
He's the kind of guy that gives you kidney punches on picks. No, we cannot like him.
Hey, he's well respected though from that. I mean, Gary Payton, you heard Gary Payton talk about John Stockton?
Yes. Yes, we can't
take his opinion on it.
I'm sorry. I don't choose Gary Payton to be the arbiter of cool. No.
And plus it is pretty white of me to say that I like John Stockton.
Yes, it is. I'm trying to help you out here and you just will not just listen. I'm just trying to steer you away from the light, Walker. What do you want to do? You want to keep walking towards the light? Let's go talk about Killian Hayes now, please, because I'm upset.
One other thing I do want to mention is the fact that I talked about how I felt it was like a 70-30 split. I like how Locked On NBA Podcast just tweeted at us and said, as discussed on Locked On Hornets, the new uniforms have fans split. And this, an article, I think maybe something tweeted out by Clutch Points. And so Nick Angstad actually wrote that out. So maybe I'm even wrong on that. More 70-30. Maybe I'm wrong on that.
Welcome to the side of right, Walker. Welcome to the side of right.
So, yeah, I mean, I guess let's get to Killian Hayes first, and then we can talk about Devontae Graham getting snubbed again. I mean, we've already had that conversation, but I guess it's official. He only got two first place votes, and so that resurrected the conversation.
Let's talk about something happier. Let's go to Killian.
So we had the Locked On NBA mock draft, and it was how the actual order is going to be, because we've done the Elite Eight mock drafts quite a bit before and we had about three versions of that. So here's our 4.0 mock draft, where it actually is the order that you're going to see when the NBA draft comes about. Minnesota, Golden State, Charlotte, the first three picks, and then so on and so forth of actually how it is going to follow after that. And so here were the picks. It was Minnesota selecting LaMelo Ball number one overall. Golden State selected Anthony Edwards, number two overall. So immediately, no James Wiseman and no Anthony Edwards going to Minnesota. So interesting there already off of the bat. We're kind of throwing a curveball as far as what most people have kind of thought this draft to be. The Charlotte Hornets selecting third overall. I texted you, Nada, and said, who do you want? Because I know you don't want James Wiseman, even if he is available. You have been pretty anti-James Wiseman. No, I know you don't want it. Well, and you've been anti-James Wiseman for a long... I mean, even before we had the third overall pick, I don't know if... I wonder if you would have selected him at eight either, Nada, and I would have said, no, you would not have.
Am I right
about that?
I'm much more open to selecting Wiseman at eight. Or nine, like the Wizards did, like Locked On Wizards did.
Yes,
I am much more open to doing that there because the value of diminishing returns is I want to get a guy that can at least play through his rookie contract here. It's different when we're talking about the top three pick here.
I get it. So I did text you that and said, I know you don't want James Wiseman. So it seems like based on what you had been talking about quite a bit, who would you choose between Killian Hayes and Denny Avdija, or Avdija, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
And you said Killian Hayes, not, and I rolled with it.
Yes.
So that was the selection at number three. We decided to go with the prospect out of France, Killian Hayes at three, and then the Chicago Bulls must have heard us because they selected Denny Avdija at number four. We'll just go ahead and finish the list. Cleveland selected Isaac Okoro. Atlanta selected Devin Vassell at six. Detroit selected Onyeka Okongwu at seven. Matt Shook has been consistent on that pick. Mm-hmm. The New York Knicks threw us a curveball as well, and they selected Alexei Pokusevski.
The Knicks were arbiters of chaos on this.
Yeah, and I think some people like him, but they were the ones I think that took a lot of the heat when Locked On NBA podcast actually put this mock draft out there. You mentioned it already. James Wiseman goes to Washington at nine. Renee Washington making that pick. Tyrese Haliburton selected by Phoenix at 10. Obi Toppin to the Spurs at 11. Patrick Williams, Florida State product, went to Sacramento at 12. Sadiq Bey went to New Orleans at 13. And then finally, it was Aaron Nesmith who went to Boston at 14. Let's go to Killian Hayes, Nada. And I'll tell you this. So I did defer to you on this selection. Mm-hmm. I think I kind of took charge more in the selections that we had in the first few drafts,
even yes.
when it's got the number one overall pick. I selected LaMelo Ball, and I was cool with that, even though the shot legitimately scares me to death. The shot selection scares me to death. I thought LaMelo Ball was a fine pick at number one overall, and I rolled with that. So this was more your guy, and let's get your reasoning as to why you selected Killian Hayes with LaMelo Ball and Anthony Edwards off of the board. With everybody else still available, you went Killian Hayes. Why did you decide to choose Killian Hayes on behalf of the Hornets?
Because I do believe that Killian Hayes can be a guy that becomes not necessarily a point guard, but I think he can be a two guard that can effectively. I saw D'Angelo Russell with this kid. I saw a better defending D'Angelo Russell with this kid. And I figured, you know what? Get a guy that we can teach up, coach up, allow Greensboro to do their thing, allow Nick Friedman to do their thing in terms of building up a guy that we don't necessarily need to contribute right away, especially when, as we've mentioned over and over again, the real talent is not in this draft, it's in next year's draft. I would much rather a project at three, and if we're going to talk about projects that most likely are going to pan out, wings win rings. I like the kid. I think he's going to be a smart kid. I think playing against grown men helps you in a way that I would honestly just see, again, I think playing against grown men would help you in adjusting to the NBA. And we do not know how long this next training camp is going to be. And therefore, I want a guy that's played against grown men. That's why there's an advantage for me between like LaMelo Ball. Again, there's a lot of guys, RJ Hampton, LaMelo Ball. Those guys are used to playing up against grownups. That's going to matter going forward. Now, you want to know the one shocker, Walker, about this?
I do. I would love to know the
shocker. Do you want to know who was number two on my board?
Who was number two on your board?
Okongwu.
Okay. Over Avdija.
Over Avdija. Because my whole thing about this entire draft right now is if you're going to have a roster that's going to be modernized, give me the guy, again, give me the big that is better at pick and roll defense. Give me the big that is better at guarding the rim. Unfortunately, there's no evidence that James Wiseman can do this at any stage. He didn't do it in high school, got out-rebounded a lot. He didn't do this in his three games in college. The only, like, if we're going to talk about potential, okay, but give me the guy that at least I know certain skill sets and I know what he can do immediately. And the other thing is, James Wiseman, for being 7 foot, looks a little slow. I don't think he's Embiid. Like, you hope he's Ayton, but if he's not, then what is he? Quite honestly. Are you going to tell me he's Marc Gasol? Like, Marc Gasol needed a couple of years of seasoning. That's almost too raw of a project, and Okongwu gives you more out of the box immediately.
Okay. So let me tell you some of the things that I like about Killian Hayes. I think Killian Hayes does have a nice handle. I don't think that he is explosive. I think that the athleticism does scare me a little bit, but I think the handle and the craft is there. It seems like he does take tough shots inside the paint where there's just not a lot of separation with the guys that he was going up against, and that does scare me a little bit. The shot, the percentage is not good for him. I don't think that his form is atrocious. He does shoot pretty low. He doesn't shoot very high. And so that does scare me a little bit as well. It seems like his best shot is the step back three. And not, I just don't know how many times he's going to be taking that in the NBA and how effective he's going to be once he gets to the association when he does take that shot. It's a hell of a shot to have in your bag. I'm not saying that it's not impressive. I just don't know how many times I'm going to be looking for that as a good shot in an NBA offense. I do think in the pick and roll, he is a pretty smart decision maker. He can have some of those turnovers, but he clearly is a good passer. He is left-hand dominant from what I've seen. But I just don't know if I like him enough over some of these other guys with the lack of athleticism. He seems to take hard shots. The shot does scare me. Even if there are things and qualifiers like the free throw percentage, I get all of that that would indicate that he can shoot well. But Killian Hayes scares me more than some of these other guys, Nada. And in fact, I think I'm even at the point where I would consider taking a Denny Abdia over a Killian Hayes. Here's the one thing I'll say. The more that I watch these wings that could be in consideration for the Hornets, LaMelo Ball is the point guard, and I do like LaMelo Ball's passing. I would not have any problem, of course, if the Hornets selected him. Even Anthony Edwards, as you watch more of him, you can clearly see the talent. You're a little scared. You're scared about the shot there, too. You're scared about the motor there, too. But not the more I watch Devin Vassell, I'm like, screw it, man. No. That guy is better. I'm sorry. Devin Vassell is the player that I would select number three overall if Anthony Edwards and LaMelo Ball are already taken. Give me Devin Vassell over everybody else. And I'm here with you on your opinion on Onyeka Okongwu. James Wiseman entices me more than you do. And I'm just too scared of an Avdija or a Killian Hayes. Here's the thing, man. Like, Devin Vassell is a better playmaker than given credit for. Maybe I should say better passer than given credit for. Okay. But
I can give you that.
The handle isn't even awful, though. Like, he's not as good of a handler as even an Avdija and certainly a Killian Hayes, but his handle isn't bad. That shot is beautiful. He throws it up and puts it high. He's already 6'7 with a close to damn 7 foot wingspan, and so nobody's going to block it. He actually gets it up there pretty quickly. Like, it's not something that takes a long time to load. You can see him actually pull the trigger pretty quickly, stepping into his shot. And the thing that jumps off of his film to me is the contested makes. Like, these are extremely tough three pointers that he's making, and they're from distance. He's got athleticism where I know the numbers aren't the greatest shooting at the rim. I don't think they're so bad. I think he is a good dunk threat. He's phenomenal in transition. The biggest part of his game that you're worried about is pick and roll. And the points per possession on his pick and roll offense was not good as the primary ball handler in college. And I get that. It was like 0.7 and it wasn't good. I completely get that. I look at that stat and then I look at Devin Vassell, even with his poor-ish handling compared to the other prospects. I don't even think it's poor, to be honest with you, but it's not as good as some of these other guys. Even with all of that, I think the passing and the decision making is good enough to overcome some of that. And you know what? Who cares? Like, I don't even think he's not even going to be the primary pick and roll ball handler in the NBA offense. It's going to be Devontae Graham, and then he can kick it out to Devin Vassell, who's shooting 40% on threes and is shooting even extremely well on contested threes. I watched this film of a Vassell and a Killian Hayes and an Avdija and damn close Nada to an Anthony Edwards and LaMelo Ball, and I can't tell you why anybody would be low on Vassell compared to everybody else in this class. Give me Vassell at number three. I don't care if we moved up in a different territory.
Here's where I have a couple of questions for you. So if you're going to tell me, so what is your board? Just if, again, all things like your ideal board, what's your board 1 through 5 right now?
I'll tell you this. You know, I'm flirting with, Vassell as the number one pick. I am flirting with Vassell as the number one overall pick. If you want to take Ball and Anthony Edwards because of their high ceiling that they have, I'm cool with that. Like, LaMelo Ball's passing and his handle, it's clearly phenomenal. The shot is ugly. The shot decision, the decision making overall, that's ugly too. You know, I think Anthony Edwards is a guy that when we hear Chad Ford and we hear some of these guys talk about the attitude and the work ethic of players, you know, I don't know Anthony Edwards. I haven't done anything where I've talked to him. I don't want to throw this out there. All I know is that it's someone that does look disinterested and settles for jump shots. I'm not even saying that can't be coached out of him, right? I don't want to throw that out there, but it is a concern for me. So, you know, that's something that's a concern that isn't going to be there with Vassell, who, by the way, all of my evaluation that I just said on him, it's all offense. That's not even to say that he clearly is the best defender of anybody we're talking about at the top of the draft, except for Okongwu in the post. When we're talking about perimeter defense, yeah, like, don't even come at me with anybody else who's a better defender than him. Isolation team, you know, I don't care what you have to throw my way. He's clearly the better defender. So, you know, when we're talking about him compared to everybody else, it probably goes LaMelo and Anthony Edwards because I think they do have a higher ceiling. They're also a little bit scarier. And then it's Vassell for me. And then I don't really care who's after that because the Hornets are selecting third. But I'm here to plant my flag on Devin Vassell Island and tell you if he's available with those other two guys gone, then take the Florida State product. And I feel just fine with it. In fact, I would be in love with it if the Hornets decided to make that decision.
You have gone complete Doug Branson. This is Lonnie Walker all over again.
He wants the craziness. Like, he wants the high upside guys that have the freak athletic traits. He wants all that. This is actually a kind of anti Doug Branson move I'm putting out there.
I really am dumbfounded. You really went for the guy that you can probably trade down, get
which
some
I'd
more
be a
asset.
Fan of, by the way, which I'd be a which, fan of.
Yeah, again, and that's where I'm at. If the Hornets really want Devin Vassell, trade down. Sure. Get more assets, especially in this draft, because but the only thing that I worry about, and this is something that I know if Rick is listening, he's going to say, there's got to be to trade up. And unfortunately, the only team that you can probably fleece in this and still get Devin Vassell might be the Knicks.
So
they're dumb enough.
Well, what would be great in my scenario, if I am so scared about a LaMelo Ball or an Anthony Edwards, and they are there at three and LaMelo Ball's right there. Hey guys, who wants LaMelo? He's a great point guard. He's got this elite skill already in passing ability. Who wants him? And then some team is so tantalized that they decide to throw you some future assets. Maybe you only have to move down a couple spots, because it's not like you can move too far down, Nada. I mean, I admit there's not a whole lot of people telling you to take Vassell in the top three.
No.
But it's not like if he's fifth overall, and it gets ridiculous when we talk about two spots. Oh my God, you're a crazy man taking him three. Oh, maybe at five, and that conversation gets a little crazy. I will admit, though, that if you go back to five or six, then you're flirting with losing Devin Vassell, because that's when, you know, he could absolutely be taken. But yeah, if that's something you can do, hell yeah, give me future assets and Devin Vassell at five or six. I would be all for everything. I'd be all for that. Let's take a break. You want to yell at me on the other side. Yes, let's take a break. Yes, you can yell at me in the last segment. Nada continues to be angry with me in the last segment of the Lockdown Hornets podcast.
This is Locked On Hornets.
And the Google description here says, on contracts made before June, where the wheat is deliverable in December, either wheat of the grades, named or numbered, B shares Batik of New York, N.B.A. So take that for what you will. That's a lot of information I just threw at you. I apologize.
What was the grade?
The wheat was graded C-.
Let's get him on.
It's time for more of the Locked On Hornets podcast.
Are you done yelling at me, Nada, or did you still have something that you wanted to say to me about my love for Devin Vassell?
You uncultured savage. Not only are you going to justify drafting Devin Vassell at 3 over Denny Avdija, which everybody who's got Luka fever is going to think is the next Luka.
Well, okay.
Over Isaac Okoro, who I think is equally just as good of a defender, if not better. The only thing you worry about, kind of, is the offense. So you're telling me no Isaac Okoro, no Denny Avdija, no possibly even LaMelo Ball if he's there. You're saying we're going to go and get Devin Vassell. That's like literally taking the kids, driving them off, saying, hey, kids, we're going to go to Toys R Us. And then you know where you end up, Walker? Dollar General. Dollar friggin' General. That's what you're telling me. That's where we're going to go. That's what you're saying. I am now a disappointed dad, Walker.
Yeah, we're going to get the water guns that are like 99 cents at the register at Dollar General. That's exactly what we're going to get if that's the example you want to bring up. And I am just fine with that.
I'm being punked here. I really do. Where's Ashton Kutcher at? Come on, Ashton. You ain't got nothing better to do. Show up, please, because I cannot believe you. I really can't. I do not believe this at all.
Yeah, I'm absolutely fine with it. And that's my take that I'm sticking with as I continue to kind of look at all these guys. I am, again, a huge fan of what Devin Vassell brings to the table. And screw it, man. Let's continue to talk about it. Like the lineups, like give me Devontae Graham. And then you even have the position versatility of putting Devin Vassell at the 2 or the 3. And then you're talking about a defensive lineup that maybe what you could do is Devontae at the 1. Cody at the 2. So you have 2 playmakers in the backcourt. Yeah, Devin Vassell, who is willing to knock down those 3-point shots if somebody wants to kick out. And then we can go a Miles Bridges 4, PJ Washington 5. That's a fun lineup where you do have some versatility defensively. If maybe you would put Miles Bridges on the bench, you could go with a PJ at the 4 and Cody Zeller at the 5.
Or give the 32nd pick of this draft at the 5, which is...
Well, who knows what's going to be there. Right. And maybe that's something we can look into later on closer to the NBA draft. But I just think you have some fun lineups there. I admit that you are sacrificing some playmaking without Killian Hayes. I admit that you're sacrificing playmaking and the passing ability without LaMelo. But to me, I do think Devin Vassell is still a good passer. I think he is a good decision maker. That guy doesn't turn the ball over either. Like he's got more. I saw this stat, Nada, from, let me look it up real quickly. I saw this stat on Twitter from Spike Smeagol is what he put out.
Oh, Cosmos,
he
said, yeah. Yeah, my boy Cosmos, yeah.
He said, Devin Vassell has more career-made threes, assists, steals, and blocks than turnovers. Not combined, he has more of each one of those than he has turnovers. And this is someone that absolutely was a big part of the Florida State offense. I can't tell you how much I love Devin Vassell. I'm sorry.
That's, clearly.
If I were to use a Doug Branson example, I would tell you that he has my draft rows. He has all of them. I gave all of them to Devin Vassell. I'm here for the lineups. I'm here for the Florida State product.
Captain Save a Knoll. That's what you are. Captain Save a Knoll.
I actually like Patrick Williams too. You know, I'm not going
to. Yes, you are Captain Save a Knoll. This is not something to be proud of right now, Walker. I am disappointed. I almost want to rescind your invite to the cookout, but unfortunately,
because I'm selecting Devin Vassell.
Yes, yes, yes.
What?
Yes.
That doesn't make any sense.
I am disappointed in you.
All right. Let's go to something that
we're going to talk about disappointed in the basketball media. So I can transfer my disappointment and my anger now. Oh, great. This is perfect.
Sure. If you want to, Nada, where do you want to direct your anger towards now? Is there something that was on your mind, or were
you mean Devontae Graham? You mean Devontae Graham only getting two friggin'
that's right.
First place votes?
Let's go there. I was going to go somewhere else, but you're right. Let's go to Devontae Graham. He only got two first place votes. And this is the conversation we were referencing that was resurrected again with the official results. So Brandon Ingram won most improved player. Bam Adebayo did get second, and it was really close. It was a really tight race between those two guys to see who was going to win most improved player. Luka Doncic was the third finalist. He would end up finishing third. Jason Tatum would end up finishing fourth in the most improved player of the year results. And then here comes Devontae Graham bringing up the rear of the top five. He only received two first place votes, and we can go back to when players were really surprised that he wasn't in the top three finalists. He's not even on the outside looking in the first spot. He finishes at the fifth spot. We've talked about this quite a bit. Look, I have been one that has talked about Devontae really having a second half shooting slump, at least from the traditional numbers of him making the baskets and not, you know, what should have gone in, his expected field goal percentage, whatever. I'm just saying, like, what he did was he really did slump as far as his shooting percentages go in the second half. And so I could understand why he wouldn't get the MIP. But I will say this, the more I compared him to Brandon Ingram, I thought Ingram might have deserved it more than Devontae. I'm kind of wishy-washy on that as you look further into it. I am not at all about Bam Adebayo. I think that guy became one of the best defenders, like top five defender in the league. I think we talk about him completely gaining a new skill and becoming one of the best passing big men in the league, where we're talking about him like averaging one assist at Kentucky. That's crazy that you even had some kind of, you know, plan B offense that you could run through him, even a plan A that they would institute, giving him the basketball. That's nuts to me. Bam doing a whole bunch of different stuff. I think I would have voted for him most improved player of the year, but it does go to show you with Luka and Jason Tatum going third and fourth in front of Devontae, it just continues to show something that we talked about quite a bit already. And it's Devontae didn't get enough love when discussing MIP.
Look, here's how crazy the MIP voting was. And this is how we know some voters need not to vote. Do you know who got two third place votes on this ballot?
Who was that?
That would be one Markelle Fultz, who hasn't seen a jump shot that he actually likes. And I like Markelle Fultz. I think he's a nice guy. I don't think he belonged in this MIP discussion. He also happens to be the number one pick in the friggin' draft. Like, let's just, when we start having these discussions, and again, a lot of this is going to sound like I'm repeating myself, but at the same point, I am annoyed now. Because we have Devontae Graham only getting two votes. Luka Doncic doesn't even belong on the ballot. He told y'all as much afterwards, which means I wish y'all would have had that conversation with him that, hey, I might vote for you for MIP. And then Luka would have told you how stupid it is that you guys wanted to shoehorn him an award this year. Jason Tatum, the guy that dunked on LeBron in his rookie year, votes too. That was silly. Like,
my God. You're right about all that.
I have a problem when we start doing this. And this is, and it goes back into my problem with the coverage and how we do this thing. Because when you start voting for this and you start wondering why players leave small markets, it's stuff exactly like this, where you do not give small market players their just due. You do not talk about them enough. You do not. And again, this is an NBA as a whole problem. If you do not vote, if you do not look at the games, you do not look at the stats, you do not look at the improvement, you are basically saying, hey, look, these small market teams, they're really feeder systems for the rest of the big market teams. And I'm not one of those guys that believes that, but you're going to set a precedent for this. And when Devontae Graham says, hey, you know what? I only got two friggin' first place votes. And despite the fact that I was statistically the most improved player in the league, by all counting stats involved, what happens? He finishes fifth. This is the stuff that reinforces biases, and it's the stuff that I wish we as a media did not do. And I feel like I just need to say, do better.
Here's the thing that gets me mad about about what NBA media has as a result of what we saw as the, I should say, final results of the MIP voting. I hate the argument about top five picks not being allowed to be in this conversation. I really do. Because what it does, it insinuates that we are right and know above all else that these are truly the best basketball players that come into the NBA draft. When I didn't hear that argument when Victor Oladipo won MIP despite being the second overall pick a few seasons ago. That guy, just what are we going to do? I mean, we talk about moving the goalpost for being a top five pick. Well, is it just because he was selected in 2013? He won 4 years later. Now we don't have a problem with it. Like when D'Angelo Russell improved so much where he deserved to be in the conversation, I don't think that there was a ton of people that had a true problem with D'Angelo Russell. Maybe I'm wrong a little bit on Russell, but I don't remember seeing this kind of outrage like we had seen with Luka Doncic and people mentioning all of this. We just assume that we're all right. Hey, you know, Brandon Ingram shouldn't have won because he was the second overall pick and he finally reached the expectations. Okay, to me, if we had a redraft and we were doing all of this again, like, are we saying that Devontae wouldn't go top 10 in this past draft? Like, I don't.
No, I would say, here's the thing. I don't think he goes top 10, but I think he goes top 15, top 20.
Whatever. That's focusing on that. Like,
yeah.
For me, it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to say he can't be a part of the most improved in the NBA player award conversation when he was the second, third, or fourth overall pick. And are we saying that, you know, second year players can't be a part of this conversation because we see, so of course you're supposed to improve after your first year. Like, of course that's going to happen. So we're really giving an award to some of these guys that might be the second year player that it was inevitable that they were going to improve really anyway, you know, or at least a lot of them.
And that's
so
fair.
Like, so much of this is kind of, it's just weird, to be honest with you. I don't want to take away the MIP because I do think that these players do cherish it. It does recognize the hard work that goes into these players winning MIP. But also, it's just such a weird way that we measure who truly was the most improved. Well, no, this guy sucked a lot worse last year and we're going to reward him for that? Like, this guy, you know, like, we're going to reward him for not sucking as bad this season? I think so many different problems go into measuring all of this, and people make the most ridiculous statements. Well, he was a top five pick. Oh, okay, so are we saying the sixth overall pick does deserve it? Then we get to the arbitrary conversation, hashtag arbitrary. The MIP voting results make me crazy with the arguments against some of these guys, why they shouldn't win it or whatever.
And you know what? I agree with you there that some of these arguments are arbitrary, but at least if we're going to start doing these voting things, let's do them in context. Luka had Kristaps Porzingis for a large portion of the season. Jason Tatum had essentially, again, you got to remember that Jason Tatum has Jaylen Brown, Kemba Walker, and a really, really good coach. Brandon Ingram, I'll give you, like I said, it's hard to argue against Bam. It's extremely hard to argue that Bam didn't deserve this more. But when we start looking at guys like Brandon Ingram, who had real player development place, and then also got Zion later, and that's when he was able to turn it up a little bit more. Like, I want these things, like, judged with context.
Yeah.
And if we use context and we use the stats and we look at what the narrative is, and we have to use narrative sometimes. I hate to say that, but narrative plays a factor.
Oh, all the people that were scolding Ramona Shelburne for voting LeBron MVP are now angry at you for your narrative base.
Come and bring it. Because again, if we're going to talk about something that was distasteful, the way that they did that Ramona Shelburne stuff was distasteful, but that's another day. That's another story for another day. But narrative, let's use context. I guess that's my thing. Let's use context. Let's be fair about this. And let's notice more than the top four or five markets and the NBA charity market, which is New Orleans. I'm just saying, let's do that. I don't think I'm asking all that much.
So I'm with you and I'm with everybody else that Devontae Graham did get too disrespected. Some of the arguments and to say that top five guys shouldn't be. And this is a popular take, by the way. Like I saw this. I saw Bobby Marks put that out. Mm-hmm. I saw a bunch of people talk about how top five picks shouldn't be in line to win this. And I completely disagree with all of that. That wraps up this edition of Locked On Hornets. Thanks again to rockauto.com for supporting the show. Tell your smart device to play the most recent episode of Locked On NBA, really any show, on the Locked On Podcast Network. Have a great day and we'll see you tomorrow.